And this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Don't forget, when you listen to this show, to check into our Facebook page. You can tweet us here at PRN underscore radio, at PRN underscore radio. And if you want to call up and speak here, it's 888-874-4888. Don't forget, again, the Facebook page. You can go to our to go to prn.fm. You're already there if you're listening. And go to the Occupied Territory page, the show page, Occupied Territory, and it will show you how to make a comment or a contribution to the Facebook page. I want to try to build that up. Although it's going well, it could go better. We also, I want to remind people, we have an app for smartphones. It's prn.fm/mobile. prn.fm/mobile. Okay, we're going to talk. There's an article in the paper that came out just the other day about how media consolidation is approaching surreal points in our society. And the news you see is the news everybody sees, and it's like maybe what one company wants you to see. It's getting worse all the time. No education without information. And we're going to talk to a guest about that. We'll be back. Okay, we're back. And as I mentioned earlier, there was an article in the paper the other day, which I read, but it's not news to my guest, but it's something my guest can talk about. It's the headline of the article from the Times was a front page article called "You Can Change the Channel, But the Local News is Identical." A lot of people complain to me on Sirius, on my show on Sirius, and I've heard this complaint from many people who listen to me on different radio stations that wherever they travel, they can only get the same news, and it's usually right-wing talk radio, or it's the same news wherever they go. And you turn on TV now, it's the same news. Why is it the same news? Well, for a long time, it's because a few large media companies, huge corporate media companies, bought up all these stations and basically centralized and made all the news uniform, including editorials that they write. But now it's getting even more bizarre that local stations, which appear to be in competition with each other, are actually sharing the same news anchors, they're sharing the same news reporters, the same newsrooms, even the same news writers. And they claim it's to save money, which may be true, but of course, what does it do to our ability to understand what's going on in our world? It doesn't help at all, obviously. So we have with us Josh Stearns, who's from Free Press. Should I say freepress.net or .org or what?
It's freepress.net if you want to find us online. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Okay. Josh Stearns, who is the Journalism and Public Media Campaign Director, and he develops campaign strategy, outreach, and organizing efforts, and works with partner organizations on events and actions designed to amplify the voices of people and communities around the country. He directs the Free Press internship and fellowship programs and speaks regularly about media policy and activism. And he was a co-author of Saving the News Toward a National Journalism Strategy and writes regularly for Free Press blogs. Before joining Free Press, Josh provided communications consulting for a range of nonprofit organizations and served as a policy and communications associate for National Campus Compact. So this obviously, as I said earlier, this is not news to you, this kind of the fact that they're collaborating like this, right?
Yeah, this has been going on for quite some time, but we've been studying it in depth for the last 2 years.
And so what exactly is going on here? It's not good radio to read an entire news article, but basically they're sharing studios, news directors. What else are they what are they sharing? What's going on? Actually, pick a place and tell me how it works.
Sure. Well, Hawaii is a great example of this. In Hawaii, there were three independent broadcasters broadcasting and serving the local Hawaii communities. And through a series of backroom business deals that never changed the ownership structures, what you would actually report to the Federal Communications Commission, the letterhead on the paperwork never changed, but the control over who got to make the news did. So now those three stations are centralized in one newsroom, and it's broadcast the same news, same anchors, same stories, same perspectives across all three broadcast channels. So on election night, you might be flipping through looking for some diverse perspectives, or looking for some people who are going to give you a different angle on the news of the election night, and you just see the same thing on every channel.
Now, obviously, people, since it's been going on for a long time, people are aware of that. What has been, is there any sort of citizen response, like grassroots response to this, or is it just organizations like yours or radio shows like this that are saying anything about it?
Since we've been promoting the full extent of what's going on, and we've tracked on our website, which you can find our interactive map at changethechannels.org, we've tracked over 100 cases of this news sharing happening across the country. And as we've been telling people about it, people have been outraged. I think, interestingly, Mike, a lot of people, when they turn on the nightly news, and a lot of people still do that, 78% of people still get a majority of their news from the nightly news. And when they turn it on, they go to NBC because that's their favorite channel, or they go to CBS. They don't actually realize that maybe in their community, the NBC and CBS channels are identical because they're not always flipping through to those. So this is an issue that a lot of people are just coming to understand the impact of in their communities right now.
Now, when you say in a local community, like you pick a small city or a large town or something, let's say there's two or three television stations, these are NBC or CBS affiliates, correctly?
Well, it's a mix. Some of them are affiliates, and some of them are owned and operated by, like News Corp owns and operates three stations. So they're not affiliates, actually owned by the head of the network. So in those cases, those news sharing that happen within that larger corporate consolidated culture that's already there.
So is it a legal responsibility for these stations, certainly it's an ethical responsibility, but is it a legal responsibility for somebody in a small city to announce that this is obviously you can see it if you're a news consumer, you just flip the dial, you're seeing exactly the same picture, hearing the same words. But do they have an obligation to announce this or to publicly inform people that that's what's going on?
No, there's really no legal requirements that deal with these kind of business deals, and that's the main thing that we've been working on, because what we've seen, and this is in some ways really a positive story about how the public interest has won out over the last 10 years, since 2003, when the Federal Communications Commission tried to wipe out all media ownership laws, the public has fought back tooth and nail every year to try to defend those limits, and because of that, these stations can't legally consolidate. So instead, they're finding these backroom deals. So it's really because we've been so successful stopping media consolidation, these sneaky deals are going on. And they are trying to be as sneaky as possible. They're trying to fly under the radar, and they don't want the FCC to start tracking this stuff.
But how sneaky can it be if I'm switching channels and I see the same person saying the same thing?
Well, that's just it. I mean, I think a lot of people, you might be flipping through, but when you land on the station that you stay at, you don't always realize that's the same. And we've had our members around the country document some of this by using, just using a VCR and recording it. And what we see is that, in some cases, maybe two stations share anchors, but their video will be slightly different, or they'll share scripts, but they'll show the AM news in the PM slot on the other station, so it doesn't always align perfectly. So it actually is pretty sneaky the way that they try to disclose or hide what's going on here.
So does this also work for any kind of editorial content? I mean, usually television stations, you rarely see them make editorial statements like you'd see on an editorial page of a newspaper or something. But obviously anybody who's writing the news, there's a slant to everybody's point of view, especially in the news. It tends to be middle of the road or conservative, which is not really too helpful for people if they need to know what's really going on. So basically you're hearing the same editorial point of view if you see the same content, right?
Yeah, I think there are two real important editorial challenges that emerge here. One is what you're talking about, the sort of perspectives and the viewpoint becomes eerily similar, if not exactly the same. The other is that it used to be if there was some corruption happening in a city and you might have two or three journalists sniffing around at it, that kind of competition was really healthy because it helped drive a story forward. People would uncover different facts. People would always look for the new angle. How can they find out something new? Here, we don't have any of that impetus. No one's competing for viewers because they're showing the same stuff on all these channels. There's no motivation to drive for a harder-hitting story or to try to dig deeper.
Now, as far as being just like a devil's advocate here for a second, according to the other, I mean, after the Times was trying to cover the other side, get their point of view, the other side is, you know, these things are so expensive to produce that some of these stations would just go out of business. People would lose their jobs. There would be less information in the community. You'd only have one station, which would be more dangerous, perhaps, because there wasn't any chance of, let's say there is even a slight difference, you know. They say it's so hard, it's so difficult, it's so expensive to maintain a staff and a production facility and everything that they're doing is to stay in business and or to make a profit. What's the response to that?
Well, I mean, if you look at the economics of broadcast television, especially right now in an election year, you'll see that they are not struggling. I mean, $63 million were just spent in Wisconsin alone, mm-hmm. and most of that was going to broadcast advertising. So we need to look carefully at these claims of poverty by broadcast stations. And I think, you know, the question becomes not are they making money, but where are they putting that money? And if they're not putting that money back into supporting quality journalism, they're putting it back into the bottom line, into people's shareholders' pockets, then that becomes their own fault for not investing in the product. And this is just another way to save more money to put back in shareholders' pockets. Now, that said, mm-hmm. I think there are opportunities for people who, you know, in one city, if you're sharing a news helicopter, I don't know that every single, station in the city needs to have a separate traffic helicopter.
Right, right.
Or, you know, maybe you're sharing some sort of equipment or pooling some sort of video footage. Okay, I think that there's actual arguments to be made about
right,
that sort of
right,
thing.
Right.
But when you start talking about sharing anchors, sharing news crews, sharing journalists, sharing scripts, that becomes incredibly problematic, and I think it breaks the letter of the law, or the sense of the law, if not the letter of the law.
Well, each one of these places got a license to serve the public interest, right?
That's right.
And obviously, if they're all collaborating together, especially on the slide, they're not serving the public interest. What is it that people could actually do about this? I mean, is there sort of an action component of what you do, and people can
absolutely.
Go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have 500,000 members around the country, and they're working in places large and small to begin to tackle this issue. And I think that there's two things you can do. One is to look at your own station. Go to changethechannels.org, find your city on the map. We've got a Google map, and you can drill in and see who owns the stations around you and what deals are in place. We've actually mapped out what deals are in place, and we've got details there.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is right now the Federal Communications Commission is in the middle of their review of media ownership laws, and they've indicated that they're interested in this issue. Now, they haven't said they're going to work on it. They haven't said that they're going to make laws, but that becomes our issue now for the citizens to weigh in on that. And we have tools on our website where you can contact the FCC directly and make sure that they know that you want the FCC to rein in this sneaky behavior.
Are there other countries that do exactly the same thing? If you pick, say, England or France or whatever, or, you know, Germany, do they do that?
Well, you know, America is unique in its reliance on commercial broadcasting for the majority of its educational, news, journalism, arts content. Many other countries have invested much deeper in various forms of public broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
where you have a much more diverse news ecosystem. So you have 50% of the journalism happening in, you know, nonprofit or public broadcasting agencies, and 50% happening in various kinds of commercial broadcasting agencies. So you end up with a much more diverse media ecosystem just in the nature of the business models at play in other countries.
So the government funds that then?
That's right.
But here, people would be all upset about that. I mean, because they would suspect that the government would try to intrude or suppress or whatever, right?
They would feel that way, although, you know, here in the U.S. right now, the most trusted government institution for 9 years running has been public broadcasting, has been PBS,
mm-hmm.
in survey after survey. And in these same surveys, Americans say that the number one place, the best expenditure of taxpayer dollars is public broadcasting after only national defense. So we have, you know, a structure right now where money flows to the corporates for public broadcasting. That's the firewall. We think that firewall could be strengthened, but we need to keep politicians' hands off of that. And we have a system that's working. We have 1,300 stations around the country who are doing critical journalism sort of through public broadcasting, and we could expand that.
Well, it is a good thing. I mean, I noticed there is some in this area of communications is, as you pointed out earlier, one of the few places where there is actually good news anywhere you see news of any type, where the FCC is giving out these small spectrum licenses all over the place, right?
That's right. They, just as of last year, they're preparing to hand out up to 1,000 or more low-power FM community radio station licenses.
Yeah, that's very good news, right?
It's very hopeful. And we've worked 10 years to get that bill through Congress, and we're very excited for the opportunities that's going to provide to communities.
Now, also, and then, of course, there are internet stations all over the place. So,
that's right. Yeah, there's a lot of great work happening there. But we also know that while the tools of media making have been democratized and lots of more people are using the internet and other tools to make media, we also see the biggest internet service providers trying to clamp down on that and become sort of new media gatekeepers, too.
Let me ask you one last question. If you just tuned in or if you're just checking this out on a podcast, you're listening to Josh Stearns, who's a journalism and public media campaign director for FreePress.net. And this is about what happened in Wisconsin, right? Now, obviously, this is the supreme example, finally, if you ever needed an example, if you didn't know it already, of what Citizens United has done in terms of the money that bought an election, right? I mean, in New York City, we're familiar with money buying elections because we have one particular person who bought himself a third term as mayor, right?
Right.
Even when he even bought a third term, let alone before he even ran, he had to buy the third term. So he knows how to do that. But let me ask you this question. This is something I really don't understand. Maybe you could explain it to me. This is slightly rhetorical. So here you have a guy spends like $60 million, as far as we know, could be more, against somebody else's $3 or $4 million. You know, he outspends him by, I don't know, 20 times as much. Then I saw a statistic, I think just this morning someplace, I don't know where it was. Maybe it was on notice that your group sent out, that 94% of elections where people were outspent by a certain ratio, a certain amount, went in favor of the people who outspent the other people, right? 94% of elections got bought. Basically, elections are like auctions instead of actual elections. Now, here's the question I want to ask you. Let's say in Wisconsin where they compiled hundreds of thousands of signatures and votes, and a lot of people were outraged about this. In any kind of location, Wisconsin being the latest example, why is it that you can that having all that money wins an election? Like, for instance, if I watch television or I watch regular broadcast television, if I walk along the street and I see signs everywhere for a certain candidate but not for another one because he doesn't have enough money to pay for them, or I see well-produced commercials as opposed to tacky commercials because, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If I see all that, it's not going to make one damn bit of difference to who I'm going to vote for because I'm going to vote for who I think is the best candidate. What is going on out here? Are Americans just stupid? I mean, do they get you just have the money, so that means people will vote for the person? What's going on here?
Well, I think one of the critical challenges is that if you look at comparing the amount of political advertising we see versus the amount of actual, real, meaningful election coverage we see, unfortunately, most Americans see, radically more of the ads than they do of actual meaningful local coverage. So in some surveys we've seen political advertising beats news coverage of elections from like 6-1 to 17-1.
Well, when you say beats, in what exact way beats?
In the amount that ends up on the air.
Okay, so, amount. But still, if you saw, like wherever you live, right, and somebody who's running for Congress and wherever you're living, right, you know who you're going to vote for. You know very well who you're going to vote for. You're an informed voter, right? What's the difference how many ads you see for the other person?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on how you're getting that information. So for someone who's relying on, let's say, broadcast news, they're only getting 1 minute of election coverage for every 4 minutes of political advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and we don't necessarily have media literacy in this country where we're teaching people to be critical readers of advertising or the news. I mean, I think media literacy and digital literacy in our schools should be right up there with civic literacy, because we need to become better readers of the media so that we can, especially in a post-Citizens United era, really thoughtful about how we're getting this information, because more and more and more of the information we receive is being mediated through these third parties.
So really, in a way, what you're saying is that you can't really trust the American people to make informed decisions on their own. They're going to make decisions based on what somebody puts in front of their face, right?
No, I actually don't think that's the case. I think we can't trust our media system to make sure that the American people have the full extent of news and information they need.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were sort of saying you can't trust an informed public. I actually would argue that we don't have the systems in place to make sure that we have an informed public.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in European countries, the public is far more informed politically. I mean, far more, right? It's in another league.
Well, you know, interestingly, if you look at the, you know, the Economist magazine, which is no bastion of sort of liberal right. politics by any means, if you look at the Economist magazine, you look at their democracy index of the most democratic nations, and that measures civic health and a whole bunch of other measures, and you look at Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index, and then you look at who funds public broadcasting the most, the same countries end up on the top. So what we see is a correlation between investment by the government, in this case, in public broadcasting, that is insulated and protected from government influence, obviously, correlates with greater press freedom and greater democratic engagement.
Well, it's no wonder that the corporate puppets, the specific corporate puppets in Congress, would want to constantly, erase PBS and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Right?
Well, we have definitely seen that happen year after year, and we think that there's definitely a different answer to that question, obviously, that we can we need to actually be expanding that funding, not trying to erode it.
So when it comes to the presidential election coming up in the fall, we're going to see probably at least $1 billion, maybe even on just one side, maybe $1.5 billion spent. And most of that will be on in advertising, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the last election, I think every dollar donated to President Obama, 60 cents of it went back into broadcast advertising. So, you know, and that was a couple of years ago. We're just going to see an expansion of that this time with the new amount of money that's flowing in. So on both sides of the aisle, I think that the people who benefit most in elections this year are going to be the broadcasters, unfortunately.
Well, all right. This is Josh Stearns, you've been listening to, and freepress.net. This is where you need to go. It's freepress.net and changethechannels.org.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. And I'm glad that there's one area where we can look for some good news, because obviously the way people get informed is how they ultimately they're going to make decisions. So,
you know. Well, there's definitely been some big political wins in the media policy over the last year. We stopped the AT&T mobile merger, and I think it just shows that people power can really move things when it comes to media policy.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, take care.
I appreciate it. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. I always did wonder about that, though. I mean, here, you know, here's Josh Stearns, who works for freepress.net. I mean, what's your opinion about that? And this is something you could either call up now, or you can tweet us if you want, or you can post on our Facebook site. You know, go to the Occupied Territory page and just post your opinion on this. I wonder, why is it that people in other countries, and he just told us, but I keep wondering, why is it that Americans are so ill-informed about politics? I think one of the reasons might be here. I ask a question, and now I'm giving the answer. How's that for a circular radio broadcast, right? Talk about short circuit, right, or a closed circuit. I think it is because people in this country really, they're so used to consuming things. They're so used to living, I can't say a life of luxury. I mean, there are tens of millions of people who are either poverty stricken now or on the verge of poverty. People who graduate from college have debts of $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $80,000. There's no jobs. Things are getting worse all the time. And we might even be headed to a point where there could be talk of an actual revolution in this country. You could see why they're beefing up the police and everything like that. But we remain uninformed, but at least we have the internet, right? At least we have the internet. It's just that, as Josh was saying, and I was amazed to read this in the New York Times, that 78% of the people in this country, and I don't know, that probably covers every demographic, like old, young, rich, poor, white, black, whatever it is, 78% of the people in this country, or the voters in this country, get their news from local TV affiliates, local TV news and some local radio news. But essentially, local TV news is where people get most of their information. And you see that it's controlled by a couple of gigantic companies. And now we see that they're behind the scenes, without even letting you know, swapping news teams, editorial points of view, reporters, camera coverage. There is no competition. There's no drive to get at the truth, to do a better report than somebody else. You know, this is what drives people to have sometimes better news stories, is that they compete with each other, right, to get to the truth of things. So none of this is happening. So people just suck this stuff up. But I think part of the problem here is that Americans are used to laying back and taking what's given them in terms of they let people sort of spoon feed them or stick a tube in their brain and just pour the color information in from the TV screen without ever critically analyzing. And you're not even trained in school. There's no courses in school. There should be courses starting in junior high school and then in high school, regular courses that you have to take all the time that tell you or let you know how it is that you can figure out, you know, what's a fact and what's not a fact. I mean, you can, you know, it's hard to know that and what's the ultimate truth. But how do you critically watch television or consume news or know who's lying and who's not lying? And where do you go to find that out? How do you go to find that out? These are courses that are actually, there are courses now that are beginning to be taught in schools, and there are organizations that are trying to teach this in schools. But how, you know, Americans basically otherwise are just completely ignorant. They're absolutely ignorant. This is an entertained-to-death country. Our brains are gigantic sponges that are just lying there sort of half soggy with ridiculous movies, absurd television shows, loud noise, and overconsumption. We're just not that interested. We go to the polls every 2 years or every 4 years. We push a button or we pull a lever or we, you know, scan something or whatever it is. And then we just go home and watch TV or feel bad or drive around in our cars or go on vacations or sit there or, you know, move back in with our parents or, you know, sleep on people's couches or try to find another job. People are just too busy trying to get by, and we're not getting by just entertaining themselves or being entertained to make informed decisions. You can't just put everything on the big bad corporations. People have responsibility for making informed decisions. Now, I'm sure that most people, 99%, I'm sure 100% of the people who listen to my show or who are listening to PRN.FM, it's like preaching to the choir, right? I mean, we are all, you are all probably people who make informed decisions, right? You don't, if you were going to vote for you know, a congressperson or a senator, you know, from your state or a congressperson from your district, it wouldn't matter if the other side had 100 times more money. It's not going to change how you vote. You're going to pick the person you like the best. You might pick the person who has the most money because you like their policies or you respect them or you believe in them. Of course, there's nobody left to do that with, but that's theoretical. But you're not going to do it just because of the money. But, for instance, take these ads that you see on TV all the time. And I've talked about this with other people before. You get companies like British Petroleum, you know, the great polluters of the world, people who put tens of thousands of people, into poverty in the Gulf by their, you know, the spill, you know, the Deepwater Horizon spill from last year. People who have destroyed the livings of thousands and thousands of fishermen and their whole families are now destitute, have destroyed tourism in the Gulf, right? And have made a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, which is something like, I don't know, 1,000 miles, you know, deep and long, and nothing can live in it. They are really, and they do this all over the world, British Petroleum. And yet, you'll see gigantic ads on television, huge, long, color, well-produced ads. And you'll say, there'll be attractive young ladies, there's fishermen, everybody's got bright smiles, and you see a sunny Gulf Coast scene. And they'll say, come on down to the Gulf, we're thriving down here. And at the bottom, it'll say, you know, at the end, it'll say, brought to you by BP, we care. Or General Electric, or whatever other company that is destroying everything, outsourcing jobs, corrupting our economy, buying politicians. You know, they'll have a, you know, some nice-looking guy looks like you, nice-looking woman who looks like you, somebody black, you know, a minority, whatever, some nice-looking guy who's like in his 50s, who's hardworking, he's got a wrench, you know, and a hard hat on. He smiles into the screen, just a regular Joe or Jane, you know. Here at GE, we take pride in what we do, and we want the economy to be green. I mean, it's insane. It's psychotic. It's the opposite of the truth. Black is white. White is black, you know. Ignorance is strength. And then it's funded by these companies. That's because they have so much money. And there's no fairness doctrine. I mean, I'm old enough to know, actually, the fairness doctrine from a broadcaster's point of view. In the 80s, I was on the radio, right? And Reagan tossed out, or he had his FCC toss out the fairness doctrine. So I had a candidate running for city council on my show that I interviewed on BAI locally in New York City. And I was compelled, before Reagan threw this out, I remember I did this. I had to call up the other office of the other candidate was running, invite them to come on. But then about 2 years later, when Reagan, you know, managed to dump the fairness doctrine, I could put on whoever I wanted to. And there was no way for the consumer of news to be as informed as they were before. So this corporate concentration, this mingling of stations and newspaper outlets and broadcast media, especially since people use it so much to consume the news, is one of the greatest dangers to our society. We're not informed. We're stupid. We don't pay attention. We can't even make the right choice. Anyhow, we're going to move on to a couple of other things. If you want to call up, feel free, 888-874-4888. Does it make a difference what happened in Wisconsin? Yes, it does. I think I had this discussion last week on this show, or now I'm confusing radio shows. I had the discussion on Sirius, too. But at a national level, it doesn't make any difference who you vote for. Does that sound like I'm being too categorical? I mean that very clearly. You can pull the lever for any congressperson or any presidential candidate, any senator. You might as well stay home in that case and watch a ball game and have a beer or go out gardening or go shopping or just sit in a rocking chair or take a walk in the park. It's not going to make any difference to what happens in government. None whatsoever. The corporations own the government. They will take your tax money and they will murder people. They will invade other countries. They will do whatever they like. It's not going to make any difference. But at a state level, it still makes a difference. So it made a big difference in Wisconsin. And all the people on the right and the Koch brothers, who basically bought the election, and Karl Rove basically bought that election because people don't make informed choices. They just vote for whoever has the most money. Although there could be something else in Wisconsin. To be fair, the voters of Wisconsin, I don't want to insult the voters of Wisconsin, they made a choice. You know, they're, you know, reasonably intelligent voters compared to maybe some other states. They made a choice. They decided they liked what he was doing. They don't like the unions. They don't want Medicaid in their state. So basically, the people who voted for him are middle to upper middle class people and upper class people and tons of money from out of state. Three quarters of the money that went to Scott Walker's campaign came from out of state, from rich people or phony grassroots organizations sponsored by Rove and the Koch brothers. Three quarters of his campaign money. One quarter of the campaign money for Tom Barrett, the mayor of Milwaukee, who got his ass kicked out there, came from out of state. So you see, the election was bought for the citizens of, for the citizens of Wisconsin by people from out of state. That election was a purchase of a national conglomerate of corporations and rich people who want certain laws enacted. They want to bust every union, including private unions. They're going to go after private employer unions now. They don't want any unions whatsoever. You can lower the minimum wage to like $2 an hour. You can have people work with only, let's say, one day vacation a year. You can increase the number of hours working per day to 10 hours per day. You can not investigate work-related accidents or conditions at workplaces. This is where they're headed. Clear, simple, straight. This is where they're headed. They want to cut off Medicaid. They want to cut off all kinds of services to anybody who they describe as being sort of unfit and not contributing. This is the first road, the first sort of step on the road, or maybe a few steps into the road, towards absolute fascism, towards Nazi behavior. In other words, they'll define who it is that deserves to live or die. And that'll be it. And it's happening from out of the state. And this is all thanks very much to Citizens United, the Supreme Court. Anyhow, we'll be back again after this little break and talk about some more stuff. Okay, this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, and here's our local update from this wonderful column that I subscribe to, and I urge you all to subscribe to it to keep abreast of just exactly how it is that they are screwing all of us, right? In case you didn't know and you want to know, so you can maintain your level of anger, if not actual rage, which does help change things sometimes. It's an online magazine called Too Much, which comes out once a week. It's called Too Much, and it's published by the Institute for Policy Studies. So you can go online to the Institute for Policy Studies and see if you can sign up for Too Much. And every week you'll get this in your mailbox. Here's some of the from the news from Too Much this week. A fascinating new book by MIT economist Darren Acemoglu and Harvard political scientist James Robinson is arguing that nations start falling apart when their elites amass enough wealth and power to essentially rig the game on their own behalf. And there's lots of sociological and economic studies that have clearly shown when you get such a division of inequality of assets and of money and of jobs and inequality of power in a country, it's sort of right before the country goes into an eclipse and falls apart, and either fascism takes over or the country just becomes poverty stricken entirely. It's kind of a crazy sort of pre chaos situation that we have here. If you look at Marxian philosophy and Marxian theory, Karl Marx's theory, is basically we are in the last stages of capitalism before everything falls apart. What will come next? Who knows? But these people are arguing that nations start falling apart when their elites amass enough wealth and power to essentially rig the game on their own behalf. These rich attempt to bulldoze away anything and anybody that stands in their way. If they succeed, their societies eventually collapse, which is exactly what's happening now. I mean, for instance, just to pick one thing out of a thousand, President Obama, who is now more of a dictator than a president. We vote for president, but we actually get a dictator for the 4 years after we vote. Dictator Obama has just sent 2,500, I think it's Marines or special ops troops, to permanent residence in Australia. And now, I may have missed this in the paper, but did Australia invade Hawaii? Is Australia launching an attack against the United States? I don't think so. Maybe I didn't catch it on the news. But we have now deployed 2,500 troops to Australia. It's going to cost something like half a million dollars a year per troop. In other words, he has just decided on his own, without consulting Congress whatsoever, which is his constitutional job to do, that he can just move these troops to Australia. There's no reason for this whatsoever, except, of course, to send a message to China. What message? What's the difference? As if it's going to make any difference. That costs, let's say, $2 billion a year. This is a country that is in complete and utter ruinous debt. And the president is talking about raising the Social Security and retirement age, cutting back health benefits. He just froze federal pay for federal workers for 4 years or whatever it was. He wants everybody to tighten their belt. He wants austerity programs. He's suggesting all kinds of ways that we have to tighten our belts. Well, we wouldn't have to do this if this wasn't one of a thousand things that he's personally doing, right? But he's going to spend $2 billion a year just by himself, just with a stroke of the pen. He can do this. And meanwhile, there are tens of thousands of teachers being laid off. Pensions aren't being paid out. And he's willing to bargain away Social Security and Medicare rights. And he can't even get it started to do a single payer. So this is the kind of place we live in. We are falling apart. All this past month in Joliet, Illinois, about 800 workers have been resisting the bulldozer of corporate elites, quite literally. The workers went out on strike on May 1st after their employers at Caterpillar, the world's largest earth-moving equipment maker, demanded a wage freeze, pension cuts, and doubling of health care premiums. This is what companies all, and you know this if you're listening to me, all over the country, everywhere you work, people are demanding wage freezes, pension cuts, and a doubling of health care premiums. This is a particular company called Caterpillar, which you're familiar with. A company that made $4.9 billion in profits last year, local union leader Steve Jones noted last week, has no good reason for pushing this sort of shakedown. Caterpillar CEO Doug Oberman, on the other hand, does have a reason. He took home $17 million last year. Why should he risk accepting any less this one? Tomorrow, another bulldozer will be rolling in Wisconsin. This is old news. But listen to this. This is what's going on in the federal government and the state government. This country is spending $1 trillion a year, $1,000 billion a year, building bases, maintaining military bases, secret prisons where we torture people, Guantanamo, we invade countries, we buy weapons we don't need, we occupy other countries. We have 163 different bases in over 100 countries. We have special ops troops everywhere. We are murdering people, invading countries. We are spending $1 trillion that we know of on national, quote-unquote, defense. Basically, it's on war and offense, and spying on our own citizens. And meanwhile, we can't afford to have people retire at the age of 65 or get Social Security when they're 65. We have to give people who are sick less Medicare help, right? Now, you figure that out. I mean, and if you decide to vote for one or the other, you think it's going to make it's Obama who's doing this, right? And companies are doing this everywhere. And my wife works for a large charity, but it's the same as a big company. So they want to freeze wages, pension cut pensions, and double the health care premiums where people could barely make it get by at all. And the company made $4.9 billion in profits last year. Now, what are we going to do about this? I'm interviewing somebody in about 2 weeks who is writing a book, Ted Rall, who's a cartoonist, and he's written a couple of books, but he just finished a book which has just come out like a week or two ago that I just, that I'm just finishing reading now, and I'm going to interview him. He says that it doesn't matter. Not only does it not matter who you vote for anymore, but that he feels that revolution, he's talking about literal revolution, is really just about to start sprouting in this country. It won't happen in an organized way. It won't happen. It'll happen in almost like a fragmented, disorganized way. He sees the Occupy movement as the beginning of what may actually be a revolution in this country. And now he's not talking about a reform or, you know, a Tea Party-like reform or helping the Democratic Party back to its roots where they'll be liberal or leftist anymore. He says, forget about all that. It's not going to happen. It's too late for that. I mean, it's the system that's wrong. And he's talking about actual revolution. I mean, what does that make? What does it make you feel like when you hear that a company makes almost $5 billion in profits and they can get away with, and they will get away with, demanding wage freezes, pension cuts, and doubling of healthcare premiums for their workers? This happens everywhere. Everywhere people are people who own corporations, people who run corporations, and the CEO, they're going to get some guy who works at Caterpillar, who's a welder, right, or whoever, or who works in the factory there making Caterpillar tractors, who gets paid, you know, like $52,000 a year and can barely get by, you know, that his deductibles and his, you know, his co-payments are so high already that his family can't do anything but eat like the most meager kind of food. They can't go anywhere, can't take vacations. They don't have any kind of a luxury life. They can barely pay their mortgage on, you know, $52,000 a year is almost nothing these days, right? He's just getting by. Maybe he can't even meet his mortgage payments. He's supposed to take a wage freeze now, right, where the price of everything keeps going up. The price of gas goes up because they rigged that. That's totally nonsense. I mean, they rigged the price of gas, right, especially before an election to see if they can sway the candidate, who to vote for. So the gas prices are going up. You know, everything's going up. The price of food goes up. It's going up all the time, right? Everything that you need, the price of power, utilities, everything goes up. They're going to freeze their wages. They're going to cut pensions, something that, so forget about your old age. You'll work till you die, which is the way it used to be, you know, maybe 100 years ago. That's what they want again. And a doubling of healthcare premiums where you can hardly afford it right now, the copays and the deductibles. And meanwhile, they pay the CEO of Caterpillar $17 million a year. Now, what do you do in a country where this kind of thing goes on 1,000 times all over? You just pick 100 corporations, 1,000 corporations, the government itself, where a congressman who makes $172,000 base pay and has all kinds of perks and then goes on speaking engagements, makes another $300,000 and gets all kinds of contributions to their campaign, some of which sticks to their fingers in their bank accounts. So let's say they make $500,000 a year. We'll go, and let's say I'm picking a Democratic congressman. We'll go in and vote on the floor of the Congress, vote on the floor of the House to go along with necessary austerity measures so that will cut federal aid to home health care, for instance, where people go and visit people who are old and sick and lonely, or meals for old people where they can't even get their own food. He'll vote for that, and he'll say it's necessary to make budget cuts. Now, we have to impose some kind of budget cuts. We just can't go on spending like this. He makes $500,000 a year, has the best health care in the country, you know, the federal employee health care. And what do you do about a thing like that? You think your vote's going to make any difference? You can see I'm practically incoherent now. I'm getting to the point of rage myself about this. So I don't know what's going to happen. And this is called Occupied Territory, this show, right? And it's supposed to be about the Occupy movement. Well, since there are no actual encampments or hardly any encampments for Occupy anymore, it's moved on to a new phase. Obviously, Occupy has injected its ideas and the whole point of income inequality and how it destroys everything else and the corrupting influence of money in politics and how that destroys everything else. Those are the root causes of all our troubles. Has injected this into the national consciousness. But what is our national consciousness? If you were to take an X-ray or a cross-section, or you could take a photograph of the American national consciousness, it would probably have a giant SUV in it. It would have a big refrigerator, a flat-screen TV, five oversized bags of potato chips, and 6 quarts of beer. I don't know what our national consciousness is anymore, but people slowly but surely are getting angry. And I'm getting more and more people angry at me when I'm on the radio now these days, on Sirius and here, because I don't believe in voting anymore. You can vote. If you're going to vote and you believe in the principle of voting, which I still do sort of a little bit at a national level, when you go into the voting booth, go straight to wherever the Green Party is or any third party. And I've had these people on the air and I've interviewed these people. They'll be on again on this show, on other shows I do. If you want to vote, if you want to uphold the principle of voting because you believe it's still a possibility that we live in a democracy or we might again one day, then vote for a third party. Now, people call me up and they're screaming at me, you should be ashamed of yourself, urging people to throw their vote away. I'm sitting here telling you today, folks, I hate that word, but I use it. I'm telling you, people, I'm telling you, if you vote for a Democrat or a Republican at the level of Congress or Senate or for the White House, you are throwing your vote away. You're the one who's throwing your vote away. You're throwing your vote away. If you want to uphold the principle of voting, yes, you're not going to elect the Green Party candidate or the Justice Party candidate, Rocky Anderson, the former mayor of Salt Lake, who's one I like the best. You're not going to elect them to be president. They're not going to get to be president. If you vote for the Green Party person for Congress, they probably won't get to be they won't get into Congress. But you will have the satisfaction of voting on principle. You will feel clean inside for a change. You will actually feel clean inside. You will feel more like what an American is supposed to feel like, and you will support somebody who's a decent politician, and if they actually did get elected, would actually do the right thing, right? Would do the right thing. You don't want to be voting for a dictator or a bunch of scared, cowardly corporate prostitutes. That's throwing your vote away. That is throwing your vote away. So I guess I'm getting more radical as I get older, but I don't see it as radical. I just see it as the only door that's left open to me. I, along with most of us in this country, unless you're very, very rich, we are living in a small, little, tiny room that they've trapped us in like experimental mice. And every once in a while, they drop in a little cheese or send a shock our way, and we go running to one side, Democrat. We go running to the other side, and we get a bigger reward, Republican, right? We get more cheese. We're still trapped in a room, and we're still mice. We're not voters anymore. We're not citizens of a free country. They pass laws all the time. This Hopi, changey, smiley, charismatic, friendly, half-black man who's in charge of things, this dictator, is basically signing laws all over the place that take away our rights. Every week he signs some goddamn law that says you can't protest. You can't get within 1,000 feet of an elected candidate or an elected representative. You can't do this. You can't do that. We're all terrorists now. They got us all worked out, right? You want to get out of that room, at least on principle, or you want to feel better, at least, while you're locked up, vote for a third-party candidate. Or then there is the street. Now, like I've said a million times, and I guess I'll stop saying it after today, I'm too old to do it. I'm not going to go do it. I did it in the 60s. I'm bashed. I'm beaten. I'm pushing 70 almost, unbelievably. I'm not going to do this now. I'm probably not going to do it. Who knows how far things have to go before I might do it. I'm not going to do this now. I've done it. And I can only, and I'm aware of the ease with which I can urge other people to do it. Other people will face getting smacked you know, by police batons like I did, or locked up and everything else. But that's what I'm doing. I'm urging people to go and do this. Now, what's left is, since there are no encampments, this is called Occupied Territory, this show, we have to basically, people who actually do want to change things, there are, you know, there are these social media things like Twitter, and there's texting, and there's the Internet. There are cell phones, which, of course, are monitored by the NSA, and who knows, they probably share everything with the local cops. Nevertheless, they still exist. And you can always sort of be one step ahead of them. They don't have that many people working for them. They'd have to hire 20 million people to monitor all the rest of us. They don't have that many people to monitor even all this stuff. So there's going to be all kinds of flash mobs everywhere. There's going to be inevitably the same thing is going to happen and happen in these Arab countries. Now, I don't know what the outcome of the Arab Spring will be. I mean, look, it's in Tunisia or in Egypt and other countries, or even especially in Libya, which was a strange case anyhow, maybe not the same thing, but especially in Egypt, where people got together and used all the social media and just converged, a place where similar kinds of things to this country, where a huge portion of the population in Egypt were young people with no future whatsoever, no jobs except maybe carting vegetables, even though they had college degrees. A lot of people leave there and try to get jobs elsewhere, and of course there's no jobs anywhere now. So you've got millions and millions of people in their teens and 20s and even in their early 30s with nothing to do, with nothing to live on. And you've got a military dictatorship. And you've got, you know, you can't, the opposition is negligible. If you go too far writing anything, they lock you up. There's no jobs. Eventually, there's no food. You live in crummy housing. Things don't work right. The electricity doesn't work right. The rich get richer. They get fat like ticks sucking blood. And finally, they had enough of it. That could happen here. It should happen here. Yes, there will be chaos. Everything will be turned upside down. It will be literally scary for everybody. But it's going to happen here. If it doesn't, nothing will change. We will wind up being Nazi Germany. We will wind up being Soviet Russia. While every 4 years, somebody goes around and says, "Hiya, folks, vote for me." Soon he won't even do it. He'll get a double to do it. Or whoever's running for president, they will get actually body doubles. Or they'll send out holographs that look like them. And you can't get close enough to know if they're real anyhow. So they'll send out a broadcast from someplace in Colorado or in the top of a mountain in Nevada. And they'll send it out, you know, and this is good for them, too, because they don't have to travel around on a plane and get tired. They could send the same thing out to 1,000 places at one time. This is the avatar, you know, of the presidential candidate, and he's right up there. And you can sit and watch it on your TV in your local, or you can go down to a big screen at your local supermarket and everybody gather in the parking lot, watch the avatar tell you how he's going to help you folks. Bullshit. They're never going to do one damn thing for you. So if you're going to vote, vote for a third-party candidate, and then figure out how it is that you can fit into what's going to be ultimately a revolution in this country. Okay, that's it for today. And I'll be back on Monday with The Turning Point, which is my other show here. I'm going to talk to a guy who's just written a new book on drugs and his lifelong experience taking legal and illegal drugs and drinking. And he doesn't think it's necessarily all that bad. Strange, huh? We'll talk on Monday.